Hi, everybody. Along with two-time NFL head coach Dave Wannstedt and NFL and College Football Hall of Famer Dan Hampton, I'm Hub Arkush, and it's our pleasure to welcome you to this week's Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. You know, it feels safe to say that the biggest story in the NFL last year was the explosion of the Houston Texans from a 2022 3-13-1 season to a 23-10-7 AFC South title and a 45-14 wipeout of the Browns in the playoffs behind rookie head coach DeMeco Ryans and NFL Rookie of the Year quarterback C.J. Stroud. Now, two of the biggest questions to start this coming season are, were the Texans for real, and which way did they go this year, and which teams has the best chance of being this year's Texans? Houston's been busy trying to improve their roster, adding multiple upgrades on the defensive line and secondary in free agency, and Wednesday they made a huge trade for Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs, and the next day added running back Joe Mixon. The question remains, though, an unexpected worst-to-first Division I climb last season, which way did the Texans, Ryans, and Stroud go this year? Dave, any number of things can happen to a team trying to make a second straight major improvement. Which way do you think the Texans are going this year, and is there more to C.J. Stroud than what we saw last season?
Well, I don't know how much more he has to do. I do think that they can improve around him and on the other side of the ball, which they've done. You know, of all the picks that they have, when I look at their free agent list, you know, Danielle Hunter, the pass rusher from the Vikings, you got to keep in mind that this was a team last year that, yes, they had Will Anderson, you know, who was a rookie that will only get better. But they run a scheme just like the 49ers with DeMeco Ryans. They run a scheme just like the Chicago Bears to some extent. It's four down guys rushing the passer. And they play multiple coverages. And if you don't have the pass rushers, like the Bears ran into this year a little bit, you got to start blitzing. And last year, going into that playoff game, they were the least blitzing team in the NFL. I mean, they were rush four play coverage. And so by increasing that pass rush with Hunter, all of a sudden now DeMeco Ryans, the head coach, the defensive coordinator, now he's more in his own wheelhouse. So I think that's big. And the second one that jumps at me is, you mentioned it, Hub, is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, you know, he's the type of back that every time he touches the ball, he makes you get out of your chair. And I believe this. You can talk about Diggs and all the receivers all you want, but nothing helps a quarterback more than having the capability of running the football. And Singletary was good for him last year, their starter. I think he rushed for about 800 yards, Hub. But you're talking about Joe Mixon, who's upset, who's got a chip on his shoulder. And, you know, he's a pro, ex-Pro Bowl running back. I think he's at a different level than Singletary. Now the key is, obviously, to use him correctly, Bobby Slowick. And, you know, it doesn't have to all be C.J. Stroud, in my mind.
Dan, what do you think?
Well, the two things, and again, if you look at, you know, the fact, the perception sometimes is reality. I mean, the additions that they have made, you know, you can say what you want about Joe Mixon, and maybe he is a little long in the tooth, whatever, but the addition of Mixon and Stephon Diggs on offense, and as Coach said, Danielle Hunter, you're starting to amass such a talented roster that it's getting a little bit, you know, scary. Think about this. A year ago, when I went back and looked at the preseason Super Bowl odds, say, you know, at this time of the year. Well, guess what? The guys in Vegas, they're pretty smart. They had the 49ers and Kansas City as their two top-rated odds to go to the Super Bowl. And guess what? That's what happened. Well, the same thing this year, but you look at the Texans. They went from the 11th odds now with the addition of Hunter and Diggs. Now they've jumped four different teams, and now they're sitting at 7th in the NFL as far as odds. So what does that tell you? It's perception, but it's a reality. The Houston Texans are playing. I mean, they're shoving the chips in the middle of the table. This is getting, you know, pretty exciting. if you are a Texan fan, because think about what they have to deal with. In their division, they've got Jacksonville, Tennessee, and Indianapolis. And I don't think there's any question right now that C.J. Stroud, he played better than any other quarterback in that division. And with the addition of Mixon and Diggs, I could see where, you know, last year's 10-7, you know, is going to be not only easy to surpass, but it would be the mere minimum that you would expect from this team because of the level of talent that they've acquired.
And you know what, one other point that I'm thinking of, you're talking, guys, you know, this team has a number one draft pick, and they have two number twos and a number three. So they got a chance. Obviously, they can hit on all their picks. But you like the odds when you're drafting, you know, your first, second, and third round pick should make your football team be contributors, if not starters. And they got a one and two twos and a three. So they have a chance, you know, to really add two, three, four starters to this young football team. I mean, that's a real opportunity moving forward.
And don't forget that Tank Dell went down, you know, late in the season. If he comes back, he was dynamic. And so you're starting to see playmakers everywhere you look at all points on this roster.
Yeah, guys, you know, it feels like we're all on the same page. I've watched them all last year get better each week. And when they went into the playoffs and blew out the Browns 45-14, that's when I realized this is a team definitely on the rise and for real. And then they go and add three Pro Bowlers in Hunter and Diggs and Joe Mixon. And then they've got all those great picks in the first and second and third round, like Dave just mentioned. You know, I think that they're going to keep improving and that they could be a legitimate contender to win more than one playoff game this year. Now, as we move to our next segment, though, the next question, who could be this year's Houston Texans, a team from last year, you know, that won 3, 4, 5 games and suddenly becomes a playoff team? You know, you look at last year's standings, and the teams that resemble what the Texans were the most are probably the Texans, the Patriots, the Chargers, you know, the Commanders, maybe the Cardinals and the Panthers. Those are teams to keep an eye on. And then amongst the bottom feeders getting the most discussion about a possible jump into the playoffs this year, it kind of starts with the Bears, the Vikings, and the Jets, all 7-win teams last year. Not terrible, but teams that you know, really need to come on to improve. And, you know, the big question with all three of them is, who's their quarterback going to be? And then you have to look at the Atlanta Falcons, who've already solved their quarterback issue with Kirk Cousins. There's no question the most talked about team so far this offseason, likely to make a big move, has to be the Bears from that group that I just mentioned. They finished the season 5-3 last year. At the end of the year, they were one of the best defenses in the league. And now they come in this year having had a great free agency run so far. They've got the first and ninth picks in the draft, and they've already added a few more key pieces. So, you know, Dan, I hate to go with the team that we all worked for a number of years, but to me, they look like the most possible team to make a big jump this year from where they were last year.
Absolutely. And, you know, and not to cast aspersions on Luke Getsy, who was the offensive coordinator for the Bears a year ago, but you look at what the Bears have done here in the last couple of months. Shane Waldron will be the offensive coordinator, and you look at where he was, what he is able to be able to produce. Think about this. You think about, you know, the fact that he, you know, has been instrumental in some of the offensive acquisitions. Some of the guys that he played with in Seattle, Gerald Everett, the tight end, he's bringing him aboard. Coleman Shelton, who was with Waldron with the Rams 3 years ago. He will be the new center. And some of the other guys, you look on the defensive side, Kevin Byard, it was a two-time All-Pro that the Bears signed to play safety. And I don't think it's any question that I thought the Bears were playing with 10 guys on defense most of the year. You know, I was not an Eddie Jackson fan. And if you plug in Kevin Byard to that position, I think it makes the defense 2-3 clicks better. All that being said, you know, the one thing that really jumps out at me is, that it seems they have a plan. They know what they are trying to accomplish. Now, will the free agent acquisitions hit this year? You go back a year ago with Ryan Poles, and even back further with Claypool. Claypool was a whiff. Nate Davis, who the Bears signed from Tennessee to play right guard, was essentially, you know, a question mark all season. Lucas Patrick, who was a rumor at center. All of those guys, they're gone. And so it looks to me like this, well, except Nate Davis, but it looks to me like maybe the second time up, Ryan Poles will be more successful with some of these offensive and defensive acquisitions. And I saw where they signed Dante Pettis for the third time. So I'm guessing that when you couple this with, which I think is the obvious pick, Caleb Williams, and the number nine pick, if they were to get Odunze, the receiver from the University of Washington, that now you're looking at an offense that on paper is set to go. And, you know, the ceiling looks really, really high.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot. I'll look at it just for a conversation from a little different angle. I think that one, offensively, last year, they overestimated what Justin Fields could do the first three games. He gets hurt the second three games, and then they go back to what he did best the last part of the season. So, I think it was real clear when they went from one philosophy to another philosophy during the season that everybody in that building knew exactly what Justin was capable of, what his strengths were, what his weaknesses were. So, we can blame that on whoever we want, but I think the coaches really figured it out and said, this gives us, whether it was Eberflus or whether it was Getsy or whoever, said, this gives us the best chance to win, guys. But defensively, everybody thinks that it was just Montez Sweat adding him to the group, and all of a sudden they start playing better. Did they on the numbers? Yes. But I'll tell you what, the biggest difference that happened to their defense was Matt Eberflus. They were one of the number one teams in the NFL playing a split safety look, two deep safeties. And when Matt Eberflus took over, two things happened. Number one, they went more from a split safety to a one deep safety and brought that safety up into the box, Brisker, and that enabled them to stop the run better. They ended up in the top, as Hub said, top five or one or two and stopping the run. And it also enabled them to be in position to pressure more. And they went from one of the least pressuring teams in the NFL, like in the bottom quarter, to the top quarter. So when Matt Eberflus took over that defense, and then you throw in Sweat, and all of a sudden Edmund starts playing better, and the guys kind of catch fire a little bit, Jalen Johnson and so forth. But so, yes, the players are a big part of it. Players win games, not coaches. But I think Matt Eberflus did a great job when he took over the defense of adjusting this defense to what the players could do, not just a scheme that he was most familiar with. So, we'll see which direction they go here now.
Dave, once again, we're on kind of the same page, because I thought Matt Eberflus did a really good job last year. I thought it was ridiculous people talking about firing him week five. Now, he did make some mistakes. It wasn't perfect. And I haven't formed a final opinion on him as a head coach, but I think this is the year we do this. But I think he's coming off a really good year and has shown he is good enough to have the team make a big leap this year if the talent is good enough and if they get the answer at quarterback. Now, what is so hard about this is whether they take Williams, whether they take another quarterback, they're going to draft one in the first round, depending on what they do with these picks. Is he going to be the starter this year? And how far can they go? But the defense is going to be improved, and it was really good late last year. So if I had to pick one team that I thought had the best chance of making the leap from being an unfortunate losing team to a playoff team, a playoff contender, my first pick probably would be the Bears. I think it's the obvious choice, because they've added so much talent. Look at what they've done on that offense during the offseason. They may have the most talented offense at the skill positions in the NFC. I'm not saying they do, but we'll see by week five, week six, how much better they are on offense with all this talent they've added. So I'd say, yeah, the Bears have an excellent chance at being this year's Houston Texans. It wouldn't be quite the same because they did win seven games last year, but you know, it could be that's where they are going. So, you know, we'll see if it happens. Now, it is time to give you guys a chance to take over. Dave, I start with you. Your biggest question or thought of the week? What's been moving you this week in the NFL?
You know, it's a head scratcher, and we mentioned him earlier, and we went by him just like a normal conversation, pretty much like the TV and media and social media did. But think about this, guys. Stephon Diggs gets traded, okay? A frontline receiver. Josh Allen's go-to by a long shot. And what do they get for him? Buffalo gets a second-round pick next year. Not this year, guys. Next year. And Buffalo eats $31 million. So they're going to sit there and eat $31 million of their cap, get nothing to help them win one game this year. What's going on there? What was no one saying? Was there a conflict with coach and player, with Josh Allen and player, the player and management? You know, it's kind of that's my lead story, because I'm saying I need more information on that. I mean, from a player standpoint, if you were on the Bills and all of a sudden we traded a player like that, you know, it's got to be a head scratcher, unless nobody up there is talking about what's really happening. But to get nothing to help your team win when you are, hey, you're talking about being on the bubble at a team that has to win. I think that the Bills and Sean McDermott, I think they're on the hot seat a little bit. They got to take a step, or they've hit the wagon. It's going to go down, and now you lose Diggs. You know, that would be a shocker to me if I'm inside the Bills organization.
Well, and I don't think that in a big picture kind of way, a lot of times if a player is viewed as a little bit of a cancer, they want to get rid of him. And you're saying, how could that be? Stephon Diggs was the most targeted receiver, averaged about 160 targets the last 4 years in Buffalo. Think about that. 100. He led the league. The only one close was, the receiver in Vegas that came from Green Bay.
Devontae Adams. Anyway, yeah.
All that being said, what's the deal? Well, you look at it, you peel it back a little bit. The last seven games of this season, including the playoffs, the last seven games, he averaged about 40 yards a game and zero, not one, not three, zero touchdowns. So something really happened that fractured his connection, not only with Josh Allen, but this offense and this football team. And yeah, you could say, you know, he's a bellyacher and he's a prima donna, like a lot of receivers, and they decided we're better without him. And as you said, they don't get anything this year and a number two a year from now. But all of that being said, it's a windfall for the Texans. And you know, and I know, a lot of times if you get jaded and think, oh, well, I'm not being appreciated, and then you bounce to another team, well, you're not going to get bounced a whole lot of times before you're going to be bounced out of the league. So I kind of think that this may be a good thing for Diggs, but all that being said, it's almost frightening to see the gaping hole that he will leave in Buffalo, especially for that offense with Josh Allen. He was the home run hitter, and they got Shakir and maybe a few other guys. But this, to me, is one of those situations where the Bills just said, we've had enough, we're moving on. And, hey, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. But to me, you know, and I know, Diggs will go down to Houston, and he's going to try to have his best season ever. And if he does, boy, it's going to be, you know, coming up roses for the Texans.
You know, I agree with you, Dan, and I think he will be trying hard. I also know that from the people that I started calling, because I couldn't believe about the trade, apparently the main reason was simply because he wasn't happy in Buffalo last year. The second half of the season, his targets were cut in half. His yardage was cut in half, and he was blaming, I don't think he was blaming Josh Allen, but he was blaming the system and the organization. He was complaining, and the Bills had not salary cap problems, but they did have to clear a lot of space, and I think the combination of the two is why they moved him. It's actually a lot like the trade the Bears made for Keenan Allen, and everybody thought they couldn't believe they got him, you know, for a fourth-round pick, but they got him because he was 31 years old. He's in the final year of his contract. In this case, I think that the Bills just are rebuilding some things and thinking that maybe they can still contend for a playoff spot with the changes that they're making, and they hope that they will. But the bottom line is that it's a great move for the Texans. And at least, you know, you got to remember they lost their number two wide receiver to free agency too. And the Bills have lost their two starting safeties. They're making all kinds of changes. And a lot of it is salary cap related, but a lot of it also is just kind of reorganizing the roster, I think, and the team and the teammates and get them all together. And I think that the Bills viewed it as it was a positive just getting Diggs out of the locker room. And the Texans just hope that they don't have problems with him going forward now. So let's go back to what we were talking about a minute ago. See if we can find another team as a possibility this year to do what the Texans did last year. I mentioned the Bears in the last segment. Another team, I should say, off the list that I gave is the Vikings. In 2022, they're a 13-win team. They go to the playoffs. Last year, Kirk Cousins goes down. Everything goes south. The team goes south, but there's still a lot of talent on that roster. The question, as we've said about the Bears and other teams, is what are they doing at quarterback? But if they can fix the quarterback part of it, they've got a team that 1 year earlier won 13 games, and we could see a very quick bounce back from them, Dan. But I don't know what they're doing at quarterback, and they don't know yet either. It looks like they're going to be drafting one of these top quarterbacks.
I think they're going to be the ones that kind of shock some people and move up. And I was doing some background on the top five quarterbacks, not even counting Michael Penix, who could sneak in somewhere in the back part of the first round. But you know, Caleb Williams, and I've said this 100 times, of all the players I have watched in the collegiate ranks over the last 10 years, the one that closely resembles Patrick Mahomes is Caleb Williams. And they did a really exhaustive comparison where they looked at, release time, how much time the quarterback would have to throw, how much does he appreciate the check down versus, eating the ball, all these different things. And Caleb Williams is in this comparison, guess what? He was the closest that resembles Patrick Mahomes. Jaden Daniels, he was basically his comp. I know it may sound crazy, but his comp was Justin Fields. A big athletic scrambler that likes to buy time, but he was more proficient at buying time and getting the ball out. Will the Vikings try to make a move to go up and get him at two or three or four? Drake May, he was the most blitz quarterback of the five top quarterbacks. His quarterbacking skills against the zone were so much better than they were against man. His comp was Jake Browning, the kid that took over for Joe Burrows. J.J. McCarthy, your Michigan's quarterback. He had a 4.5 to 1 TD to interception rate. And he only had, think about this, in college, he only had 791 dropback passes. And you compare that to Bo Nix. Bo Nix had 2,115. And yet, J.J. McCarthy was his close comp was Tua and Stetson Bennett, the kid that signed with the Broncos. And then last but not least was Bo Nix. And they said he was the best nibbler coach in college football, that he would, his closest comp to what the quarterback skills that he possesses at the time of coming out of college this year, they go back like 15 years and try to find the closest comp, and it would have been Trevor Lawrence. So all that being said, I think Minnesota sees that, you know, this is a very talent-laden pool, and they are probably going to pull, you know, the lever and try to make a move to go up and get one of these top five. Now, which one, I don't know, but it'll be very interesting to watch because, you know, you can't, you know, Kirk Cousins, he was rated the number one free agent in all of football, even being injured. That, to me, was startling. Obviously, he's in Atlanta now. Daniel Hunter was the best player they had on defense. He's in Texas now. So, I don't know. Again, the old maxim, how do you get better letting good players walk out the door? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I see the Vikings making a big improvement this year. First of all, I got to go back to 22 and remind everybody that of those 13 wins, 11 of them were one-score games. It was kind of a weird season, and I'm not taking anything away from them and what they accomplished in 22. But I don't think they were quite as good, or they appeared as their 13-4 record, and then it came apart last year, you know, when the quarterback goes down. And then to lose Hunter, I mean, that's a big deal. And you look at their roster now, there's even talk about them trading Justin Jefferson. Now, I'm not sure where that talk is coming from or why they would do that. They've already got two first-round picks. But really, when you look at their roster, other than Jefferson and T.J. Hockenson at tight end, you know, Jordan Addison is pretty good number two wide receiver. Their running game was terrible last year, and they've got to fix the quarterback position. So I don't see a great possibility that they're going to, you know, suddenly get back to the playoffs this year. But then again, nobody saw what was coming in 22. And so I'm not going to underrate, you know, the coaching staff and what they can do. And if they're going to draft a quarterback, but Sam Darnold, they brought in to help develop whatever young quarterback they bring in. And if he has to open the season as a starter, he's not a terrible quarterback. You know, he could help them contend, but I just don't see the talent as I go up and down that depth chart to see them as being a playoff contender for this year. So we move on to another segment. We've actually already been touching on it, talking, I think, about quarterbacks. But Dan, I know you mentioned you were working on some stuff during the week to get on your kind of top thought or pick for this week.
Well, and I kind of hit on it there about those quarterbacks. And if you read the press releases about all of these quarterbacks, and every year, everyone gets really excited about, you know, the class's potential. But as I just related, the only one to me that really jumps out with a true blue kind of a gold star rating and comp would have been Caleb Williams. But I was looking at some of the different draft positions, and you're thinking about the Minnesota Vikings, and I'm not sure exactly where they are drafting, but, you know, say Tennessee is drafting seventh, and, you know, they like who they've got at quarterback. You could possibly see, you know, one of these guys, you know, being coveted by the Vikings, or even Denver. And them trying to make a move up and get to that position to grab one of them. But if you're looking at Jaden Daniels and his closest comp is Justin Fields, are you that excited? Well, what about Drake May? His comp is Jake Browning, J.J. McCarthy with Stetson Bennett, Bo Nix, Trevor Lawrence. Well, that's pretty good. You know, he was the first overall pick, 4 years ago. All those things being said, I don't know. Everyone's talking about how they're all really bunched up and they're all, you know, I don't want to say a sure fire, you know, number one, you know, franchise quarterback. But to me, it only kind of increases the likelihood that the Bears have kind of sold themselves on Caleb Williams. And, you know, everybody knows why, because of this group. And they're all very talented, we know that. But of this group, Williams kind of stands head and shoulders above them as far as his, you know, his performance, especially even including the last half of this past season when they were playing meaningless games with virtually no defense. All that being said, Williams is still the goods.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I don't have, you know, I want to like Jaden Daniels and I do like him. I think he, you know, this kid's played 5 years. He's played at a high level and gotten better every year. But you know, boy, he's not very big. And, you know, if he wants to run as much as he ran in college, over 1,000 yards, you know, the health thing would concern me there a little bit. You know, I think Drake May's probably a little better half than people give him credit for. But, you know, unfortunately, the Mitch Trubisky ghost is kind of hanging over his head. And hate to say that, but it's probably influencing some people. Even though Drake May's had a long career there, Mitch played basically 1 year. The sleeper, and you hit on him a couple of times, the guy that I'm telling you, I talked to people that they love is Bo Nix. And, you know, this guy is a better athlete than you think. He's a smart player. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's a mature kid. I think that Bo Nix could be a guy that makes a jump here. And for the right reasons, you know, it's you just put the tape on. And the guy that I'm afraid is going to get someone's going to take him. You know, Penix, we ain't talked about him much at Washington. He could be the best deep ball passer in this draft, you know, but we know his age and we know the health problems. I was on a call yesterday, and his knees and his health are a concern for a lot of people. They are a concern. You can't stick your head in the sand about it. So depending on the offense, I think the whole thing with Penix is, what are you going to do on offense? You know, if it's going to be maybe a Sean Payton type offense, drop back, balls coming out, or maybe a Minnesota play action pass offense, balls coming out, I think Penix could be their guy. If it's going to be a little bit of a run pass option, some quarterback read, he's not your guy. So I think that he's got to be, you know, it's got to fit in the right slot for him to be drafted and for him to be successful. So.
You know, guys, I've been telling everybody who's asked or will listen for the last year that I think the two best quarterback prospects in this draft are Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy. There's no doubt in my mind that Jaden Daniels and Drake May and Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., they're all going to go in the top 30 to 35 picks. And I'll just say that the only question on Williams for me, there's no physical questions. There's no talent questions. I'm still worried about all the things we keep hearing and a lot of the off the field stuff. And that can be a big negative and something you got to be careful with. And the Bears and other teams are doing their homework right now. In the meantime, McCarthy is flying up boards on these mock drafts, which are really pretty meaningless, but he does belong there. And I think the one thing that is important for everybody to understand is forget the stats. Everybody's worried about, I forget which coach it was talking earlier today about that. People just look at the stats and then try and evaluate quarterbacks. It's meaningless. It's not meaningless. I mean, you want to have good stats, but it's more about the mental aspect and the way they read the game and run the game. And that's why McCarthy may be as good or a better prospect than Williams. But Williams, physically, he is the best. The one other thing I would mention is nobody's talking about other quarterbacks besides these six because they're all so big. But you look at South Carolina and Spencer Rattler. You look at Tulane and Michael Pratt. You look at Florida State and Jordan Travis. You look at Western Kentucky and Austin Reed. Those four are going to be drafted. Now, whether it's in the third round, the fifth round, I can't tell you. But, you know, you look at what's happened in recent years, and the best new quarterbacks have not come from the first pick in the first round. So those are some names you may want to keep an eye on, too, you know, and they're guys worth taking a look at. So let's move on to one more team I think worth talking about that could be this year's Texans, although they're a harder one to explain. And when you look at making a huge turnaround this year, I look at the Cardinals. They were 4-13 last season. They finished 3-5 with wins over the Falcons, Steelers, and Eagles, and a 1-point loss to the Seahawks after Kyler Murray returned from injury. Now, Murray was the first player chosen in the 2019 draft. He actually had pretty good seasons in 20 and 21, and then struggled with injuries in 22 and 23. And he and Baker Mayfield are the only two back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners from the same college, Oklahoma, in the history of the NFL. He was also drafted 9th in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft. He's the only player ever drafted in the first round of both sports, and he's still only 26. But if he's going to become a franchise quarterback, it's going to have to happen this season. Now, he has at times, even though he's a bit undersized, shown some of the ability to do that. You look at the rest of the Cardinals roster, and I think you worry a little bit because, you know, there's not a lot of known talent. But they were playing better the second half of the season. And then you look at the draft. They've got 11 picks this year, guys. They've got the 4th, the 27th, the 35th. They've got 3 in the 3rd round. They're going to add a lot more talent this year. So I don't know as much about them as these other teams, but I do think, much like the Texans came out of nowhere last year, that if someone comes out of nowhere this year, it could be the Cardinals. I don't know, Dave, if you agree with that at all.
I don't, and I'll tell you why. I'll just be very honest with you. God bless one of my fellow Pitt guys. I don't know how James Conner did it and is, continues to do it. I mean, you know, when he battled the blood cancer, leukemia at Pitt, they weren't sure if the guy was ever going to play football again. Not only did he come back and finish his career at Pitt, but what is it, 7, 8 years now, and he's been in a league, and he was productive as heck last year. God bless him, but, you know, I just have a tough time. I get excited for the kid, but a tough time getting excited saying he's the running back for the future here. You know, we're going to carry you. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know the head coach much. I got to see more. So I'm not totally all in on him yet. I'm not in on Murray. I'm not in on the ownership there. So I don't have a good feel for these guys. I mean, their backup quarterback, they signed Desmond Ridder. The guy that was at Atlanta out of Cincinnati. I'm not all in on him. So I guess at the end of the day, Hub, I'm not in on these guys much. I don't see them doing anything. They got to prove it to me. God bless. I hope they do. But, boy, there's a lot of people here that need to show me that they're all in and they can put it together as a team and go out and win some games before I get excited about Arizona.
Well, I will tell you this. Jonathan Gannon, the head coach, came out of nowhere a year ago. And I mentioned this a week or two ago. Their defeat of the Dallas Cowboys, if you was to look at the NFL last year and say there was like a half a dozen games that were beyond shockers, they were like, what the hell happened? That was one of them. And that's with Joshua Dobbs at quarterback before Kyler Murray was healthy enough to come back. All that being said, Arizona, you know, that's kind of a team Lou Holtz would love. Just a bunch of scrappers. They don't have their names up and, you know, their top first round picks. But they play the game hard. They're a team that's kind of fun to watch because they don't ask no quarter and they go out and they try to kick ass. But their biggest problem is their division. They got to play the 49ers twice a year. They got to play the Rams twice a year. They got to go up and play Seattle. You know, they got to play them twice a year. All that being said, I don't see them making a lot of noise, but I do see that team becoming more than a hard out, just a fist fight Sunday afternoon for everybody that plays.
Yeah, and Dave, just to be clear, I'm with you. I'm not picking the Cardinals either. I was just looking at teams that might be worth talking about, and when I saw what they've got in the draft, you know, and I saw the way they played the last part of the season last year, they just reminded me a lot of the Bears, who is the team that I am picking to improve the most. But you're right. They don't have enough talent yet, I don't think, you know, to make that big a turnaround for this year. Guys, we're almost out of time, but one more thing I just want to touch on, and we alluded to it with the trade that the Bills made and getting rid of all their wide receivers. But, you know, you look at the Eagles and the Bills, who've been regular playoff factors for a number of years now, but each of them have been cleaning house this offseason, and yet it's hard to believe that the Bills and the Eagles won't be in the playoffs, but they've let enough talent get away that they've got a lot of work to do in order to get back to the playoffs this year. And Dan, I'm going to come to you first. You know, are they going to be able to do it just because they've done it every year, it seems, for the last 4 or 5 years? Or could this be the first time that we don't have either one of them in the playoffs for quite a while now?
Well, I kind of think Philadelphia last year was the Super Bowl hangover. Okay, they lost in the Super Bowl and they fell apart, and there was a lot of issues All that being said, you know, remember, they fired their coordinator on defense halfway through the season. They were rated, you know, for coaches after the Super Bowl loss. And last year's season, it was abysmal. All that being said, they still have a lot of really, really good players. Their offensive line, even without Kelsey is one of the best. Their defensive line, you know, year in and year out is top four. I could see them there. The Bills, on the other hand, the Bills, and you mentioned it, they, both of their starting safeties, they, you know, they got rid of Stephon Diggs. They got rid of Mitch Morse, their center. The Bills, to me, is, and we talk about this, Coach. We talked about this week after week, saying, hey, Buffalo and Sean McDonald, he may be a good coach. But to me, the whole game plan looks like everybody kind of go through the motions, and then, you know, somewhere in the third, fourth quarter, Josh Allen's going to win the game for us. And that don't work. It doesn't. It may work once or twice, but it don't work 12, 13 times a year for you to get in the playoffs. So I see the window of the Bills closing down, not only because of the fact that they've taken a couple of steps back in personnel, but think about Cincinnati getting Joe Burrow back. They've had a good offseason. Think about the Texans. You know, they're getting better. Baltimore, you know, we don't even talk about them, but now with Derrick Henry, they could be more than a handful. So the Bills, I think 2 years ago, they could have been mentioned as the top team in the AFC, top two or three. Well, they may not even be in the top five going into this season.
Yeah, I think both these teams are on the hot seat as teams. I like both of their quarterbacks. I can't believe that Jalen Hurts is not going to rally that Philadelphia team. I like the talent from top to bottom a little bit more in Philadelphia. Buffalo, I think, is almost feeling more pressure because their expectations were higher for a longer period of time, and they haven't been able to meet those expectations. It'll be real curious to see how Josh Allen responds. You know, at least Jalen Hurts has his body of work, his guys around him, playmakers around him, a tight end and receiver, running back, offensive line, where Josh Allen doesn't have that situation. And, so I'll be real curious to see how he handles it and if it's enough. I question, I do think the Eagles will be back up. Playoff team, is that going to be good enough? That's the question with them. Buffalo, I'll tell you what, I'm nervous about them. I really am. If they can get it done and get in the playoffs, and if they don't, I think there could be wholesale changes.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot with both of you guys, although I will say I just think too much of that Eagles franchise and that front office in particular and that quarterback, and to think that there isn't enough young talent that we haven't seen yet. I think all these moves with both the Bills and the Eagles in part are salary cap related because they have so much veteran talent and they have so many big contracts that they had to start cleaning some of that up, and that's what they've done. But I do think it's going to hurt them both this offseason, and I agree with you guys. I still think too much of the Eagles to not see them in the playoffs. They've got the best coach in that division. I think somehow the Bills find a way too, but I don't know yet how they're going to do it with all the talent that they've let go. Guys, we are out of time for this week. And I can tell you right now, the next couple of weeks, we're going to be all draft all the time. We're going to break it down for you every way we can. And we look forward to that. But for now, all we can do is say thanks for being with us this week. Have a great week. And we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. We'll be right back.